بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Today we want to talk about the reappearance, inshallah, of the Imam. However, just one more sign of reappearance we discuss, and it's something about these signs. Of course, at the beginning when we were trying to proceed to discuss the signs, I mentioned a few things about the whole idea of signs of reappearance. There's one more thing to discuss at the end, and then inshallah we'll discuss the idea of, or the way the reappearance would happen. Some other signs. The creation of a Muslim state in the East, Fil Mashraq. Now this Fil Mashraq, of course, is very vague, because whatever is on the eastern side of Medina or Mecca or Iraq is called the East. So where in the East? But there are certain guesses that this East, usually Mashraq was Khorasan and parts of Iran were called East at that time. So, of course, they had no idea of going as far as China or, for example, Indonesia to talk about the East. The East meant Persia, Khorasan, these areas were the East. So, another sign is creation of a Muslim state in the East, as we had creation of a Muslim state in Syria, led by Sufyani, creation of a Muslim state in Yemen, led by Yamani. Now, this Muslim state in the East is led by Ar-Rajul al-Khurasani. Now, a man from Khurasan, so it's quite clear where the East, if we accept Ar-Rajul al-Khurasani, it's clear where the East is. Yakhruju Nasun, this is a Sunni source, of course. Kanzul Ummal is a very famous Sunni source. Reporting from the Prophet, it's Kanzul Ummal, sorry, I have misprinted Kanzul Ma'al, it's Kanzul Ummal. يخرج ناس المشرق فيوطئون سلطانه. The people of the East will rise and will pave the way for his sovereignty. Now this is of course a part of tradition chosen by Al-Muttaq al-Hindi and brought in the chapter about the reappearance of Mahdi, saying that of course when he wants to come there should be some preparation. He should have support. And this support should come from organized armies and states. It cannot come from individuals. Therefore, there is need for some states to be somehow lured to the call of the Imam when he appears. And one of the most important things is this state in the East, which would pave the way for his sovereignty. And there is another hadith from Imam Al-Baghir alayhi salam, كَأَنِّي بِقَوْمٍ قَدْ خَرَجُوا بِالْمَشْرِقِ. It is as if I am looking at a people, that means with my, of course, spiritual knowledge, who rise from the East. They demand the haqq, but it is not granted to them. Then they demand it repeatedly, but they are not given what they ask for. When they see this, they wear their swords, then they are offered what they want, but they don't accept. That means there will be some sort of conciliation. Okay, what do you want? We give you. The final, of course, word is no, we don't want you. We don't want you to be there to give us anything. You have to go. So they would not accept before they rise and win the power. And they would not submit it to anyone but the Sahib al-Amr. Those of them who would be killed are martyrs. Should I see their time, I would sacrifice my life for the Qa'im. Meaning that I would be among these people who stand up, take the power, make a state, and prepare the way for the Qa'im. And therefore their state is a state that if anyone is killed for it, would become a martyr. And I wish I would have become one of those martyrs. This is what is mentioned from Imam Al-Baghir alayhi salam about this state in the East. State will come in the East. Now, the tradition would not elaborate on who these people are. And since the old times, people have made speculations about this state in the East. What is it? And whenever faith is created in the East, like the Safavids, for example, they say, yes, this is paving the way for Sahib al-Am to come. So they have made guesses. Abu Muslim of Khorasan, this Rajul came from Khorasan, this was the man who paved the way for the Abbasids. And if it was not because of him, the Abbasids wouldn't have defeated the Umayyad. And very interestingly, this man came with black banners, as we have in many traditions, that people who are in this Eastern state, they come forward with black banners. However, of course, probably this hope was something made by the Abbasids themselves, to say that we are the ones who are preparing the way for Mahdi. And we discussed that how they tried to somehow justify the rule of some of their caliphs by claiming that he is the Mahdi, especially the Mahdi son of Abu Ja'far al-Mansur. Now, the second speculation, the Safavids. We might say, well, at that time, when the Safavids ruled for about 150 years, so when they created their state, they hoped that this is the state which we are going to hand to Mahdi alayhi salam, and this is the state coming from the east, which we have in our report. However, it did not happen. Now, some people may say that when it says they paved the way for Mahdi, it doesn't mean that their government would last until the time of Mahdi alayhi salam. They paved the way for him. And the Safavids, we can say, they paved the way by creating the Shiite state. They might have done so. They might have done paved the way for Mahdi to come. However, the traditions say that they would not pass on this power to anyone but to Mahdi, which of course is something which did not happen about the Safavids. The third speculation, which is sometimes heard, the Islamic Republic of Iran. Of course, we hope that it is, but it might turn out not to be. We have to wait and see whether this is the state which is going to be connected to the state of Mahdi alayhi salam or not. This we have to see in the history. Now, the supporters of the latter view resort to other traditions, like a tradition from Imam al-Kadhim. This is a very famous tradition about Qom. In the books about the history of Qom, you will see this tradition very much, and other traditions about a time when people from the Qom would pave the way for the reappearance of Mahdi alayhi salam. The hadith which is in Bahar al-Anwar says, رَجُلٌ مِّنْ أَحْلِ قُمْ يَدْعُ النَّاسَ إِلَى الْحَقِّ. A man from Qum will rise and will call people to Haqq. A people who are like pieces of iron will gather round him. The stormy winds will not shake them, neither they will get tired of battles. No, they will fear. Their reliance will be on God, and the good end belongs to the God-fearing. Now, of course, this tradition doesn't say anything about Mahdi alayhi salam, and that these people would rely on God and take the power and then hand it to Mahdi. But some people have connected these, have related this to the previous hadith, saying that, yes, okay, that state which is going to be created in the East might be the Islamic Republic of Iran, and the man from the home is, of course, Ayatollah Khomeini coming, and they handed it to Rajul al-Khurasani, a man from Khurasan, and then the other things. But these type of speculations has always been there in history. Since the traditions are vague, since they are not very clear, which of course they should be like that, not very clear, therefore speculations cannot have much value. We have to really wait and see, and if we do not live long, inshallah, in Barzakh, Allah will give us permission to see, because usually people in Barzakh are unaware of what's going on in this world, but as we are unaware of what's going on in that world, they are unaware of what's going on in this world, but sometimes there is a permission to see what's happening, and we pray that Allah would give us that power to see what will happen. at least to resolve some of our intellectual problems that we have about Mahdi alayhi salam will become. Now, question. Now I want you to answer this question. Are the signs a point of hope or disappointment? Any answer? Yes. It's neither. Why? So what's the point of all these signs? Okay, you are just returning my question to myself. Good. Very clever. Any other answer? Hope. Now, hope, yes, of course, at times when something happens which might be somehow a case for those signs. Like, for example, we say a state in the East would be created which will pave the way for coming of Mahdi alayhi salam. Then we say, now, yes, we have a state in the East, therefore it's quite close. But sometimes these signs seem to be very far-fetched. Like, for example, Sufyani making a coup in Syria, taking Iraq, taking Jordan, taking Palestine. This is certainly not going to be in our lifetime. Of course, the world is, especially the world of politics and power, is quite unpredictable, but usually, many of these signs seem to be very far, and therefore, we might think that, okay, this is not going to happen soon, if these signs. So, at times, it might give us hope, especially in times when something close to those signs happen, and we say, yes, this is the sign, it's good, Imam is coming, but usually these signs are somehow deterrent. We think that before these things happen, Imam will not come, these things have not taken place, and therefore Imam will not come. However, a good thing about these signs, you remember we said that these signs are of two kinds, mahtum and mawquf, the definitive sign and conditional sign, things which would take place definitely, and things which take place conditional of some other events, contingent, so to speak, signs. However, even about this definitive sign, we are told that don't worry about it very much. Because even for the definitive signs, the bada'a might take place. And it might not happen. Suddenly, Imam may come tomorrow. We don't know. So, we don't need to wait for these signs to come about so that Imam comes. Many of these signs have already taken place, but it's not the case that necessarily, even the traditions we had that Mahdi will not come before Sufyani, if Sufyani is not there, Mahdi will not be there. Now, look at this tradition. I don't know how authentic the tradition is. It is in Ghaybat al-Nu'mani, Abu Hashim Dawud ibn Qasim al-Ja'fari. Al-Ja'fari, because he is a grandson of Ja'far al-Tayyar, a very, very prominent reporter from A'imma alayhi salam, and he lived until the time of Imam, the 12th Imam, a very prominent member of the family of the Prophet, Dawud ibn Qasim al-Ja'fari, Abu Hashim. He says that we were around Imam al-Jawad, and a mention of Sufyani was made, and that his advent will be definitive. مَا جَاعَ فِي الرَّوَايَ مِنْ أَنَّ أَمْرَهُ مِنَ الْمَحْسُومِ. So we were discussing in the presence of Imam al-Jawad that yes, in the traditions we have that Sufyani is definitive, it's a definitive sign. فَقُلْتُ لَعَلِي جَعْفَرْ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ حَلْ يَبْدُو لِلَّهِ فِي الْمَحْسُومِ. Then I asked Imam Jawad alayhi salam, is it possible that even in this definitive sign, bada' might take place? You know what bada' is? Bada' is a change of decision, so to speak. Of course, Allah does not change His decision, but a change of what has been informed about the decision of God, which for certain reasons a change would take place. This is a very, very important concept in the Shi'i faith, which are always criticized because of it by other Sunni scholars. Of course, they don't know that the Quran says, وَقَالَتَ الْيَهُودُ يَدُ اللَّهِ مَغْلُولَةً. The Jews say the hands of Allah are tied, because when He makes a decision and He informs, then there is no change. غُلَّتْ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَلُعِنُوا بِمَا قَالُوا. May their hands be tied. Allah's hands are open. He informs you about something, you do things, things might change. It depends all the time, because of the course of events which are made by your decisions. Therefore, bada is not change of decision of by God, but there are many, many decrees of God which would take place conditional of certain events or certain decisions by us. And therefore, we may be informed that such and such would take place. And why we are informed? Because the level of knowledge of A'imma and Prophets reaches only to that level, to that station of knowledge. It cannot go beyond it. So they inform whatever appears to them. However, Allah might make other things appear. This is the meaning of bada to them. And then we think there is a change of decision for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And Allah's hands are never tied. So here, Abu Hashim asked Imam Ajad alayhi salam about this very concept. We know about bada in our faith. You have informed us, you have told us that there is bada in Allah's decisions as it appears to us. Is it possible that this bada happened about Sufyani as well? That even Sufyani would not come and Imam comes before him? Qala na'am. He said yes. It's possible. قلنا له فنخاف أن يبدو لله في القائم. We said then we fear that bada may happen in qa'im as well. Now we are promised that Mahdi will come. What if bada includes this and then Mahdi does not come? Then all our hopes and whatever we are saying, whatever we are preaching is in vain. Now, it's a very, very deep and wise answer. He said al-qa'im is a promise, and Allah will never break His promise. Bada never happens about a promise. It happens about things which prophets are informed about, then a change comes because of the change in position of the people. إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِغَوْمٍ حَتَّى يُغَيِّرُ مَا بِأَنفُسٍ. This تغيير, change, is something which happens in Allah's decree. Because people change, we change. We change our decision about them. And however, we do not change promise. We never change promise. So, Mahdi is a promise of God, but Sufyani is not a promise. Sufyani is a sign of coming of Mahdi, and therefore, yeah, bada may include it. Now, just off the course of these lectures, another question will come. You know, about all these promises that Allah gives in the Quran, that He would take the wrongdoers to hell. There is a discussion between theologians and Muslim scholars whether Allah can break this promise or cannot break this promise. He promises, وعد الله, this is the promise of God. He will take any wrongdoer to hell, any evil person to hell. But what if on the day of judgment He says, okay, I don't think it's fair. Go to paradise. Can He do it or He cannot do it? The Ash'ari say He cannot do it. It's impossible. The Mu'tazila say it's impossible. They are very rational people, Mu'tazila. It's impossible. When Allah promises something should go to her, they should go to her. The Shi'as and the Ash'ari say, no. Allah may break this promise. So, is there anything wrong here? Here, Imam says, وَاللَّهُ لَا يُخْلَفُ الْمِعَادِ. And there, we have this idea that, yes, Allah, of course, has promised to take everyone, every evil wrongdoer to hell, but He might at the end of the day, because he's very merciful, his heart is very soft, so to speak, then he might see these people are going to burn in hell. He said, no, okay, I change my mind, go to paradise. I want to destroy the hell altogether, for example. Is it possible? Well, the Shia say it is. Now, you Shia say it is possible, so tell me why. Yes.
Could you be talking about the prophet who will perform for Allah the name of the prophet is compared to the promise? Is it a different level of promise that we give them?
No, it's not anything to do with bada, you see? Not that it's a level of knowledge. The prophets are informed, yes, I may not take them to hell at the end of the day. It's possible. And we hope so. We hope this happens, inshallah. Of course, not for some people. But for most people, we hope this happens. So, any other answer?
That's
right. Yes, that's true. Actually, promise should be kept if it is in your favor, isn't it? If I promise you that, for example, you do this and I give you such and such, if I don't keep it, it's wrong. It's unethical. But if I promise that I tell you, I swear that if you do this, I will punish you. And you do it, I have promised. Is it ethically wrong to break this promise? Or good? It's good, isn't it? It's ethically good. It's not wrong. If I am a real honorable gentleman, everyone would expect from me that I do not keep or keep the promise and be generous. Now, this is exactly the case with Allah. He does not take anyone to hell unless there is no other choice. Otherwise, now, we have this verse in the Quran, وَمَنْ قَتَلَ مُؤْمِنًا مُتَعَمِّدًا. Anyone killing a mu'min, purposely, intentionally, فَجَزَاؤُهُ جَهَنَّمُ. The punishment is the hell. وَغَضِبَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ. Allah will become very angry with him. وَغَضِبَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَلَعَنَهُ and will curse him. Then Imam, because this was the understanding about Shia, that this is the case, Allah may not punish. Then the Imam was asked, what about this verse? He said, فَجَزَاؤُهُ جَهَنَّمْ خَالِدًا فِيهَا وَغَضِبَ اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ. Allah will have wrath on them and curse them. Imam said, yes, جَزَاؤُهُ جَهَنَّمْ إِنْ يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ عِبَادًا. If Allah wants to punish, His punishment is happening. But what if He doesn't? It depends. It depends on different situations. Some hope, anyhow. It gives us some hope that Allah is even more merciful than we think. Now, okay. Therefore, regarding the signs, nothing is happening. Imam might come tomorrow. Without a state in Syria, without a state in Yemen, without Sufiani, without whatever, he might come tomorrow. And we don't know. Maybe all these signs should be fulfilled before he comes. Therefore, these signs are really not a very important thing that we have to worry about. Or concerned about. Not worried about, concerned about. Okay, now let's talk about the reappearance, how does the Imam come about? Of course, this is one of the most complicated and difficult literature of hadith, because there are lots of contradictions, different time scales and these things, which is really, really difficult to sketch a sort of orderly and chronological course of events for the coming of the Imam. So, what is discussed here, what I will discuss here as the course of events of coming of the Imam, is based on the book of the era of reappearance by Sheikh Ali Qurani. Of course, even that book, because the traditions are so much different with each other, contradicting each other, even in that book you find those contradictions. However, I've simplified it. This is an imaginable course of events when Imam reappeared, how it happened. However, as I said, it's not certain. It's not possible to draw to work out one real course of events because of these contradictions in tradition. And therefore, this is, as I said, an imaginable course of events, something which may be the way the thing will develop when Imam is permitted to reappear and come back to the people. Now, Mahdi alayhi salam, now this is for certain, reappears in a circle of 313 companions who gather round him when he declares his mission in Mecca. He declares his mission in Mecca. Or before that. Now, why before that? Because of things which I mentioned later on. However, these 313, according to traditions, are of a wide range of nationalities, and 50 of them are women. I don't know why they want to do what they want to do in the government of Mahdi alayhi salam, but now it's a fashion to have ladies as prime ministers and deputy prime ministers, deputy presidents. So, because these 313 are the core of the Imam's government. They are not just companions like others. They are the core of Mahdi's companions. And having 50 women among these 313 is amazing, isn't it? However, his reappearance has two stages, which we call the minor reappearance and the major reappearance. So, as we had minor occultation and major occultation, we will have, inshallah, minor reappearance and major reappearance. Now, exactly the same definition as we had about minor and major occultation. Minor reappearance is when the Imam appears only to these 313, or even to a closer circle. He sends these emissaries around, saying that the Imam has appeared, reappeared. However, no one sees him. No one knows where he is. He is in his hideout. Because it is not possible for him to immediately come out and say, I am Mahdi. Immediately he will be killed. So he is not going to have, unless on very, very exceptional occasions, he is not going to have miracles or extraordinary power to win the battle or war. It's just ordinary organizational power that he is going to organize. Of course, when we say not extraordinary power, the same way as we hear about the Prophet, peace be upon him. He had extraordinary power. He had this support from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But it didn't come like, for example, he's standing in front of the army and said, be dead, and everyone be killed. No, it's not like that. He had to have an army, he had to fight, he had to have battles, he had to have support, and all these things would be about Mahdi alayhi salam. So it's a very, very difficult path for Mahdi alayhi salam to start from scratch, of course with these 313, and then to mobilize people, attract attention, mobilizing an army, making alliances with the government in the east, with the government in Yemen, making alliances, and then advancing to take control. So, the minor reappearance happens after the coup of Sufyani in Syria, as the tradition puts it, in Rajab, followed by the Sayha in Ramadan. We said that there will be a Sayha, that's the cry, that's talks about Mahdi is coming, beware, Mahdi is coming, or something like that. If you do not know what it would be look like, what is it looking like? However, this happens. Why I have wrote Rajab? Because the whole minor reappearance would take only 6 months. And then there will be the major reappearance. That is the coming of the Imam to the open public and declaration of his mission. So, if it happens in Rajab, then the Imam should come in Muharram. As we have in many, many different traditions, that he will reappear openly in Muharram. But in Rajab, when the coup takes place by Sufyani in Syria and takes power and creates that very rigid Muslim state there, which is against all sorts of flexibilities, then Imam reappears to some of these companions. Now, how these companions are informed, how they become aware, probably because such pious people, which as soon as the message of the Imam has reached them by those very close clients of the Imam, we said Imam lives among some clients, then they will accept, they come to the Imam, and from his hideout the Imam starts sending these people to scholars, to heads of state, to others, saying that Mahdi has come. In this period, which lasts for 6 months, months until Muharram, the Imam does not appear to all, but will gradually recruit the 313 and will send his emissaries to different heads of state, scholars, prominent people, from his hideout in Medina. Now, right from the beginning we said that Imam lived in Medina, and when he is going to come again, he comes from Medina. Therefore, probably his real and permanent residence during all these times is Medina, that he is going to come from Medina as well. Since the mission of the emissaries come after Sufyani and Sayha, so they are not to be belied, isn't it? Because in traditions we had that anyone coming and telling that they have a mission from the Imam before Sayha and Sufyani, they are liars. But now they are not liars, because Sufyani has come, Sayha has come, and therefore the good people, scholars, prominent pious people, they accept that Imam has come. And they are waiting. Now, okay, Imam has come, what should we do? We want to come and see him. No, wait. Another time. Wait. Just have in mind that Imam has come. Wait for the orders. Wait for the right time. And in this way, the word spreads. And this is what makes Sufyani very angry, of course, that Mahdi has come. This is what makes the government in Hijaz very concerned, that Mahdi has come. The news would go round, and therefore people would think that, yeah, there are very extremist people who are talking about Mahdi, and we have to uproot them. These are very dangerous people, because what's the meaning of Mahdi? What's the concept of Mahdi? To destroy the injustice and iniquity. So these are revolutionary people. So this polarization would take place. Of course, the West is not aware of this yet. This is now going in the Muslim world. Now, yeah, this is the hadith which we mentioned before. Allah فَمَنِدَّ الْمُشَاهَدَ قَبْلَ خُرُجِ الصُّفِيَانِ وَالسَّيْهَ فَهُوَ كَاذِبٌ مُفْتَرٌ. Beware whoever claims seeing me before the advent of Sufyani and the Sayha, he is a liar. So if these people come after Sufyani and Sayha, they're not liars anymore. And people should believe them. Two states respond positively to the Imam. Iran under Sayyid Khurasani, because this is the Persian I have omitted Al, and Yemen under Al-Yamani. They believe that yes, this has happened. And they wait. They wait for the orders, they wait for the right time. However, they cannot do anything at the moment. And we will see that even later on they cannot do anything until the Imam himself makes the alliance. Two states would actively reject Sufyani in Syria and the government in Hijaz. As I said, this is now inside the Muslim world. We are not talking about the world outside. Reject him, Sufyani in Syria and the government in Hijaz, this will create bitter acrimony among Muslims. Now the polarization will happen. A group of Muslims believe that Mahdi has come, and you know how quick these news will spread at the time of internet and TV and radio, and we don't know at what that time what will come. So how quickly these news will spread, and how quickly the society becomes polarized, and therefore the Muslim world becomes into two pieces. One piece, who are mostly Shias, believe in Mahdi, in the reappearance of Mahdi, and the other in Hijaz and in Syria. They are against it, and therefore they try to find this man who claims to be Mahdi, but no one knows where he is. They try to find him and kill him. By this time, the whole world knows about this dispute. When dispute, when polarization comes here.
People will polarize, but the people in Yemen are not Shia and Sunni.
Most of them are Zaydi. However, even among Sunnis, because the idea of Mahdi is there among Sunnis as well. But for the most part of the Sunni world, this is not accepted. For the most part of the Shia world, this is accepted, that the Mahdi has come. Until he comes and openly creates his own state, then the Sunni world will realize and then things will change. But at the moment it is like that, Yamani and Khorasan. Now, when this polarization happens in the Muslim world, then the whole world knows about it. Yes, the Muslim world is now, it's two pieces are fighting. Good opportunity for the British, of course, and but it's too late now, of course, at that time it's too late for the British to do anything, but they think that this is now a good opportunity, divide and rule, go. This dispute in the Muslim world is known, and about the reappearance, and more people succeed to meet him and pay allegiance to him. Gradually, some people are taken to him, who are very, very confident and trustworthy. They are taken to him, they pay allegiance, they go to their cities, and they say, wait, wait. Now, we might say to the Imam, we have waited this long, again we have to wait, you have now come, again we have to wait. Yes, wait. Patience, as-sabr, ra'sul iman, patience is the head of faith. In this quarrel now, of course, the West cannot stay indifference. Of course, Sufyani and his army are supported by the West because these are revolutionaries, these are people who are talking about end of the world and these things. Now, it's quite natural that the West would support Sufyani and his army. However, nothing has happened yet. The state in Hijaz is busy with the wrangling of its royal family at the time. Now, we have many traditions about this. When Imam reappears in Medina, when he's in his hideout, there is lots of quarrel inside the royal family who's ruling the Hijaz. According to the tradition, this happens after the death of a king by the name of Abdullah. Don't raise hope. There are thousands of Abdullah. We don't. عن أبي بصير this is in بحر الغوار قال سمعت أبا عبد الله عليه السلام يقول من يضمن لي موت عبد الله أضمن له القائم. Well, I have to do the translation of this, sorry. Whoever guarantees for me the death of Abdullah, I guarantee the reappearance of the Qa'im for them. Then he said, when Abdullah dies, people after him would not follow one ruler. There would be arguments inside their own family. وَلَمْ يَتَنَاهَا هَذَا الْآمْ دُونَ صَاحِبُكُمْ And these quarrels and disputes for power would not end in Hijaz until the Qa'im will come, inshallah. And the kingdom, which lasted for years, suddenly turned into months and even days. Someone becomes the king, He's killed next week, someone else becomes the king. He's killed after 15 days. And this is what will happen in Hijaz until the Qa'im will come. Now, this is one of the most important prerequisites for the Imam to be able to declare his mission in Hijaz. Otherwise, if there is a powerful central government, he would be killed immediately. So, this is the time, actually, the Imam is waiting for this time in Hijaz, that the central government is weak, he can come out in Masjid al-Haram and declare his mission. He, furthermore, being worried about the situation in Hijaz, Sufyan, being worried about losing the unstable Iraq to Iran, and the hegemony of Mahdi will attack and occupy Iraq, because now Iran is the pole which supports the Mahdi, and Iraq is in between. Some people follow the course of Mahdi, some people are opposed, and therefore Sufyani is worried that Iran's hegemony might extend to Iraq and the Mahdi's idea would extend there. So he preempts the Iranians and attacks Iraq and occupies that place. He furthermore, now all these are traditions, it is not something made up. However, as I said, it's very difficult to get this one straight line from traditions, as they are very, very complicated literature. He furthermore, being worried about the situation in Hijaz and seeing the weakness of the state there, will send an army to attack Medina and to find Mahdi. Now, you can't do it, I do it. This man has created this big turmoil in the Muslim world. He claims to be Mahdi. We know that people say he's in Medina, so I want to find him. He will have anyone by the name of Muhammad ibn al-Hassan killed in Medina. This is very strange. He wants to make sure, like Pharaoh killing every newborn child in Banu Israel, to make sure that Musa alayhi salam is not born. He wants to make sure that no Muhammad ibn al-Hassan will be left in Medina. Of course, it's very easy because the identity card and all these things. Therefore, many of Sadat will be killed in this attack in Medina. Now, still the Imam is in his hideout. The Imam flees Medina with a couple of his companions and resides in a mountain near Mecca at Zitoa. At Razwa and Zitoa and Ghayraha. Don't we have this? The mountain near Razwa near Medina, Zitoa near Mecca. Probably a mountain called Zitoa. He will reside there. So you can see how tense the situation is, that even the rumors or the news of Imam coming had created such a tense and military type of society and environment for the Imam. The Imam sends Nafsuz Zakiyya as his emissary to Mecca to tell to people that Imam has come and he is going to come to you soon, but he will be killed in Masjid al-Haram. This happens towards the end of Dhul-Hajj. His murder will meet vast international coverage and condemnation because he has done nothing, just people in Masjid al-Haram while he's praying or something, just coming, killing in the mosque, and this, of course, attract condemnation in the Muslim world and worldwide. Now, it's bad that Nafsuz Zakiyya is killed, but it's good in the sense that now all attentions are drawn to the fact that, yes, there's something happening. This idea of Mahdi, everyone knows Mahdi, and the tension which is created because of that in the Muslim world. The Imam will ask all his companions to secretly enter Mecca. These are those 330. He calls them from all around the world, to whom, where he has sent them, And on the 9th of Muharram, he will enter Masjid al-Haram and declares himself as the Mahdi. This is 2 weeks after Nafs al-Zakiyya is killed in Masjid al-Haram. Initially, some people and the security in the mosque moved to kill him. But the 313 who are all present, and some of them don't know each other, protect him, because these are the people who are all around the world. They have come to Masjid al-Haram by the message of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. Even they don't know each other. But as they know, all they all know Mahdi, but they don't know each other. So as soon as people try to attack Mahdi alayhi salam, like what they did to Nafs al-Zakiyya, and especially the security, they stand up, they put up a protection or a sort of protection shield around the Imam. His followers around the world will feel scared and weep and cry, because they think he will be arrested and killed. This was not the way they expected, because now Imam was in hideout, all these troubles were going on, Sufyani was after him, in Hijaz also people were after him. Now he comes suddenly to Masjid al-Haram and declares his mission, so they all get really, really concerned and worried. However, he will be responded positively in Mecca. Amazing. And due to the virtually non-existence of a central power in Hijaz, he will easily manage to take Mecca without violence. It's very important, because all through this struggle to establish a state, Imam does not use violence. So without violence, Mecca holds in his hand, because they don't have a central power. Now people who are living in Mecca, many of them, even many Hujjaj, they respond to Mahdi. And the 330 people, very clever, especially the 50 women, they are very clever, and they manage to establish that power in Mecca. The next day, on the day of Ashura, he will make a public announcement which is broadcasted worldwide. And of course, in traditions we have different statements. What this statement is, what does he say, what is he going to say. Of course, this is very, very important. This is going to be very, very important, because the whole world's attention is already drawn to this dispute among Muslims, and now he wants to make the declaration. He is the Mahdi who was in hideout, now he has come out, he wants to make a public declaration, because of course the traditions are somehow not conforming with each other, and we really don't know what he is going to say. His statement is going to be very, very important, because this is the first impact that he is going to make on the world. He is addressing not only Muslims, he is addressing Christians, Jews, Buddhists. All the people around the world would hear him. So we don't know how is he going to address the people. That's going to be very important. Of course, he will talk about justice. He will talk about humane behavior. He will talk about God, which is forgotten in the West. And these are the things that are elements included in these different traditions about his khutbah on that first broadcast, worldwide broadcast. His followers increase in Mecca, and he succeeds in defeating an army sent by Sufyani to arrest him. Now, of course, they thought these are just a bunch of people, very small. An army is sent by Sufyani, because in Hijaz there is no central power to command, and therefore an army is sent by Sufyani from Iraq, and they manage to defeat that army. Now the danger has, of course, increased, supported by the West. Sufyani will mobilize a huge army and move towards Mecca to arrest the Imam. Now this is the crucial moment that Imam needs help, isn't it? Now, there are, how many are they? Now, this army is a tremendous army with the most sophisticated weaponry. They move to remove the Imam and to arrest him. And this is the crucial moment when the Hasd take singing into the earth. The whole army of Sufyan will sink into the earth. And this is actually a miracle for the Imam, which convinced many hearts in the Muslim world and outside the Muslim world that this man is someone special. This is not an ordinary person. So again, here Imam does not use any violence. It's Allah who uses his own violence, or the earth, who's using its violence, dragging the Sufyani and whole his army into the earth. He, however, in the most crucial and decisive moment of this whole event, will sink in the earth with all his army in Bayza, Al-Khatf of Al-Bayza, you remember. Some sources, however, put the mobilization of Sufyani after the Imam is established in Iraq. Now, this is a long time, so this is why I say the traditions do not tally with each other, so we have to make an imaginable course of events. The shocking news of this event works in favor of the Imam. And with an army of 10,000, the Imam moves out to take Medina and end the persecution of his followers there. Because the situation in Medina is horrific for the Shia, for the followers of Mahdi. So he moves to take Medina. This is called the Khuruj of the Imam. As his first declaration in Mecca is called his Zuhur, appearance. Because traditions talk about the Zuhur and the Khuruj of the Imam. Now, him coming out in Masjid al-Haram, declaring himself as Imam, is not Khuruj. It's Zuhur, it's reappearance. The Khuruj is when he moves out of Mecca to take Medina. The following hadith is a witness to this terminology. Abdul Azim al-Hassani, you know, or you know him, buried in South Tehran, قُلْتُ لِمُحَمَّدْ ابْنَ عَلِي ابْنَ مُوسَى. Sorry, I have not translated this tradition in English, I just translated now. He says that I told to Imam Jawad al-Isa, I hope أني لأرجو أن تكون القائم من أهل بيت محمد. I hope that you are the قائم. Because he was very young at that time. He came after Imam al-Rida. He was a point of hope. I hope you will be the Ghaim of the Ahlul Bayt, who will fill the earth with justice and equity after it's filled with oppression and inequality. He said, Ya Abul Qasim, ma minna illa qa'imun bi amrillah. Of course, all of us are qa'im bi amrillah. We rise, whatever we do, by the command of God, and we guide to His faith. However, I am not that Qa'im which Allah would purify the earth in by him in his hands. يَجْتَمُوا إِلَيْهِ مِنْ أَصْحَابِهِ أَدَدَ أَهْلِ بَادْرِ. His companions, whose number are the same as the number of the army of Badr, 313 men, will come round him from farthest parts of the earth. So that's why in traditions we have that these people are from many, many different nationalities. As wide as Europe, even we have probably more than 50 of them being from Europe, and from Africa, from Northeast, from Far East, like Indonesia, China, these will come to them. And then, وَذَلِكَ قَوْلُ اللَّهِ أَيْنَمَا تَكُونِ يَأْتُ بِكُمُ اللَّهِ. After this number has come together, Imam أَذْحَرَ أَمْدَحَ would make appear these affairs. فَإِذَا أَكْمَلَ لَهُ الْعَقْلِ. Whenever the number of his army is completed, and that is 10,000, خرج بإذن الله. Then he advanced. He advanced. He comes out. خرج. So here we have talked of ظهور and talked of خروج of the Imam. And خروج is when he moves out of Mecca to take Medina. The above hadith mentions that 313 will come to him from the farthest places. And when this number is complete, he will appear. And when 10,000 gather around him, he will advance. This is the difference between appearance and advance. As soon as the hijab is taken by the Imam, Iran, Iraq, and Yemen put themselves under his command and submit their sovereignty to him. Now, you might say, why, when Sufyan was moving, these states did not start to do anything? Well, because of the politics, global politics. Now, why, for example, Muslim states who are now supporting Palestine cannot attack Israel or cannot do anything about many other things which are happening? Because of the global politics, the balance of power. I mean, as soon as, for example, say Yemen or Iran started to move towards Iraq, of course that was an act of aggression, and then the allies would have come. So it is a very complicated world. Therefore, they could not have done anything until the Imam establishes himself in Hijaz, and then they submit their sovereignty to the Imam. And then they become one big alliance. Now, when they become one big alliance, of course, this is very dangerous. This is now a big power. It's not just a man in Mecca or in Hijaz, this is now a big power. So, as soon as the Hijaz is taken by the Imam, Iran, Iraq, and Yemen put themselves under his command and submit their sovereignty to him, although there will be oppositions in Iraq still. Iraq is a marshal. The establishment of such huge Muslim states would whistle the alarm in both the West and the East. And the tremendous propaganda machine in both directions would start their machinations. These are terrorists, these are such and such, they kill, they do not respect human rights or whatever. Well, we know what they say. Don't worry about it. When the Imam comes, don't think that your Imam is like that. It's just media machinations. So, that is why the people of the West and the people of the East, this is what exactly we have in the tradition, start hating Mahdi and cursing him. Now, how he is portrayed, we don't know. How he's going to be portrayed in the media in the West, we don't know. But you know, this media can do whatever it wants. They have brought about several revolutions in different countries, just by the portrayal that they make of the events. And now they can portray, maybe they just say he's a magician, look at this khat in Baida, the army of Sufyani, all those innocent people being killed by his magic, or we don't know what they say. But this is what starts to happen. The people start in the West and in the East. Now, the West, of course we know where the West is, Europe, America, then China in the East, China, Japan, all those other countries, they start to have a very bad image of Mahdi alayhi salam. A battle will take place between the forces of the Imam and the Western fleet in the Persian Gulf. Why? Because of all these sorts of propaganda, which results in the latter's defeat. So, the Western fleet in the Persian Gulf is defeated and they go. Now, this adds to the propaganda now. Now, this man has come to take the world. This is a brutal Muslim leader who has no regard for blood, no regard for soul, no regard for life or human rights. He wants to take us back to the dark ages, when people were worshipping God and all these things. So, this propaganda starts to increase. The Imam will choose Kufa as the seat of his government, and many believers would move and settle there. Because now the Imam is there, they want to live beside the Imam, so the Kufa will become a huge, big Islamic metropole. The Kufa will become. After establishing himself in Iraq, the Imam will send his army to free Al-Quds. Now, this is the most dangerous mission of the Imam, of course. We don't know who has the Quds at that time, but certainly the Jews are very strong there. And they would put up a very, very fierce defense against Iran. The Western powers will move their forces to land in Turkey to thwart the Iran. So, again, we see how these, of course, it's very complicated. I have made it very simple here. The traditions are very complicated. How these forces come, how they move, where they land, where they start to somehow establish their armies. And therefore now this great danger of clash of civilizations come. Now, Muslim civilization, a big chunk of the Muslim civilization is now in complete standoff with the West. On their way, now Imam wouldn't move to Al-Quds himself, he sent his army. Now something very interesting happens here. On their way, the Imam's companions show a miracle, which makes the West hesitant of confrontation. From a cave in Antioch, they would bring out the holy chest in which original copies of the Torah and the Injil are kept. And this, just like electricity moves on Western media, they claim that yes, the original copies of Torah and Injil have been found, and then they are recited, they are argued about, discussed, and these things. And now West becomes a bit hesitant to confront this man who has shown this very important miracle of bringing the holy chest in. The Imam will therefore enter the Quds without any confrontation from the West. Now the West pulls out. The Imam into the Quds. And this is the very crucial moment. The very crucial moment. It is probably in Al-Quds where Isa will descend and will bear witness for Mahdi. This is what was the main problem, the West and Islam. Now, Isa will descend, bear witness for Mahdi. His testimony is of tremendous importance for convincing the people in the West. Very, very important. Now, of course, he has to convince the people that he is Jesus. He has to convince the people that he is truthful. And certainly, he knows how to speak. And this, of course, softens the heart of the Christian world. According to some traditions, the following verse in Surah Ali Imran alludes to this. Now, I stop here, because now we have some discussions here. And we take questions and answers, and inshallah we'll continue with this next week, Tuesday, this Tuesday, inshallah.
Thank you, Mr. Sheikh. It seems that Iran is an essential place, so...
Yeah. If they talk about this Iran, we don't know. Maybe something in future.
Let's hope it's Iran.
Hmm?
Let's hope it's Iran.
Inshallah.
Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. And so, if you want to...
You talked about the warfare. It's mostly what are the weapons in the U.S.? Why, if they're sophisticated weapons, why would they not bomb like they do nowadays? They bomb places before they go in.
Yeah, they use bombs, but now, of course, they don't want to bomb cities and these things. They have to. Even nowadays in battles and wars, they just don't bomb the city. They try to make a fight with the army rather than the city. Therefore, at that time as well, of course, it's not a wise thing to bomb Mecca. And how they can make sure by bombing Mecca they would kill them off. So, it's not possible. We have, in some traditions, we have a huge fire appearing in the sky. And this might allude to an atomic bomb or something which falls in some Islamic land. However, the traditions are so vague that you really cannot get. But verifies with the warfare that they have at that time. We don't know what it is. Now we have tanks and aeroplanes and these things. We don't know what sort of weaponry they would have at that time.
Yeah,
Obviously, there was no Turkey at that time. Can you just explain, what do they call Turkey, or how do you recognize the place to be Turkey today?
They call it Arzut Turk. And of course, then they talk about Rum, which talks about the West. And Europe, they called all these areas Rum. And the Turkey, of course, was called Arzut Turk.
Hello.
Can you get
the narration?
How reliable is it? Which narration? All these different events, you mean?
Yeah, the accounts.
The accounts of the imaginable course of events. This is not one tradition, these are tens of traditions which are put together. As I said, you cannot rely on it. It's just something which we can infer from these different traditions. There are lots of contradictions. There are lots of anachronisms between them. And therefore, we have to try to work out a sort of more reasonable and imaginable course of events. Therefore, do not take this for granted. When the Imam comes, I'm not responsible. If you take another course of events, I'm not responsible for taking. Yeah, it's much more detailed than this. I mean, this is just a gist of it. They are very detailed. Names are there, numbers are there, names of villages are there. So, I have just...
I think that when it says that we're not going to see, even if the name of the mountain is there, when all this happens, that everyone, you know, this kind of an account is accessible to everyone, wouldn't it just give away like ideas and, you know, people are looking at things and deciding?
Sorry, I didn't get the question. What's the question?
You know, the account, for example, it says that when you want
he hides somewhere.
Okay. Even if the name of the mountain, where he's going.
Oh, Vitova.
So if the narration that this is accessible to everyone, or the account that this is accessible to everyone, would everyone know where he is when he actually does?
Well, I think probably in Vitova. Again, the traditions are very vague, and apart from that, Vitova is a big place. I mean, three people can hide there very easily without being found for several weeks. And this is what will happen.
Sheikh, is there anything to, number one, it's a quick one, is anything around time frame of how long these events will take? And number two, can you just elaborate if there's anything that says why Kufa would be the center? Is it because Imam Ali was not the governor there, or if I remember correctly, yeah, because Imam Ali was the same time the people of Kufa perhaps turned away from Imam?
Well, those people at that time are quite different from the people at the time of Muhammad's center. So they are not the same people of Kufa. Why he establishes his center there, we don't know. And it might be for some strategic reason. Not because, of course, it was a seat of Amirul Mu'minin or something like that. And Amirul Mu'minin chose Kufa for a strategic reason. Because he wanted to attack Sham and he wanted to protect his lands from the attack of the troops from Syria, and therefore Kufa was the best place for him as the center of his government. It should be for some strategic reason which we are not aware of.
How do people know that is Prophet Isa when he comes?
Yes, that's what I said. He has to be very convincing. He has to say things which would resonate with Christians. And he should have miracles with him, proving that he's Isa. Of course, for Muslims, the Mahdi would testify that this is Jesus. However, for Christians, he has to say things which would convince that we don't know how he would convince them.
In terms of the numbers, the color of the Imam, you mentioned 313. Does that mean that there might be some Sunnis in there? Because you said that it could be a white. That's the first question. The second is, it also says that until that time he had 10,000 saying to the Quran. So maybe we have a better chance there rather than 313.
We have a better what there?
Better chance of joining.
Oh!
Because the 300.
Thank you, good. Yeah.
Because the 300
presumably is the 338 would be the core of his crimes.
Yeah, of course. After that 10,000, there will be millions of them. I mean, the army that he sends to Al-Quds are hundreds of thousands. So that 10,000 is when he moves from Mecca to Medina. But when he establishes the state, when he makes the alliance with other parts of the Muslim world like Yemen, like Iran, then of course there will be millions of people who will help him. That there is a bigger chance there as well, I mean, for us to join the Imam alayhi salam. However, as I said, the 313, whether they could be Sunnis or not, they have to believe in Walaya of Imams. Maybe, we don't know. Nothing is said about that. Nothing I have seen about that. Whether they are Sunnis or Shias, or it's always presumed that they are Shias. But they might be.
This is just
they are very honorable women. No, we don't know. Maybe there might be some traditions. I did not really investigate about the details of these 313. In Bahar al-Anwar, he actually mentions in detail the number which come from any area, from Europe, from Africa, from other parts. He mentions the numbers. However, they are not reliable very much to rely on and say that these are. But these are the people who are absolutely absorbed in Walayatullah. They don't live like other people in this world. They don't see things like other people in this world. Their mindset is completely tuned to the mind of Imam alayhi salam and to the heart of Imam alayhi salam. And that's why as soon as he talks to them, they believe. It's not that they want a miracle or something. As soon as Imam speaks, it resonates with their heart and with their mind because they have lived that type of life themselves. And they know who the Imam is. And this is the most important quality of these people.
The fact that, just a quick question. In what context was this hadith narrated about the details of the course of events? Was it just questions by the defendants or?
Some of them are questions. Some of them are when the Shias were completely disappointed. And then the Imam will start to talk about these things. Don't worry, this day will come, these things will happen. And then when the Imam talks about it, it created questions, and questions were raised, and the Imam elaborated on it.
Secondly, do you think
Shaykh Ali Qurani is a respectful scholar in Qum. And he's the one who has created this Ahlul Bayt digital library and many other internet and computer digitalized CDs and these things in Qom. A very respectful scholar.
Assalamu
alaikum.
Alaykum assalam. The 313 people,
be
the people of the future or the past people who are very good?
No, these 313 are the people of the future. Then the issue of Raja is a different thing. If we have time, we talk about it. That's a completely different issue. These are the people of that.
When we discuss the traditions of Islam, we've been very clear and we've actually visualized the role of the West. In all the substantial work. So, is that how the traditions are? Are they very specific about the role of the West?
Of course, they talk about Rum, as we have in the Quran, Ghulibat Rum. Now, Rum were actually a place above Turkey. And therefore, we don't know what sort of a faith these traditions are talking about. That's why we just call the West. But the good thing about the whole issue is that although the confrontation between Islam and the West will become very imminent and close, however, it never takes place, especially after Jesus alayhi salam descends, then the whole disputes will be resolved and there will be no confrontation between Islam and the West at that time.
And then the other possibility is that, you know, if you refer to the Byzantine Church or the Roman Church, could it be about the clash of religion rather than the clash of religion?
Clash of religion? Well, if that was the case, they would have talked about Nasara and the Yahud. We have talks about Nasara and Yahud. But when it talks about regions, I don't think it's talking about religion. It's possible.
You have mentioned about the shape of the Torah in the cave in Antioch. Is there any significance that these two would be together in a check? Is it a conspiracy?
Ha! Don't know. We have to wait and see. Of course, conspiracy on the part of Imam, you mean?
Conspiracy about someone like a witchy court or someone who maybe.
No, because the Imam approves the text. That's the very important thing. Because the Imam knows what the Torah and Injil is, so he approves the text. And therefore, there is no hesitation about the authenticity and originality of these two books that they find there.
Okay,
thank you. Inshallah. I just mentioned before we finish. Two points here. One was about that the Ahl al-Sunnah also believe in the 12th Imam, but they don't believe in the Baqarah.
Yeah.
They believe that he's going to be born. And that ties in with Hamid's question about the Ahl al-Sunnah being amongst the followers and the supporters. One second point about NGO, is it the same place where the people of the cave are?
Yeah. We have tradition that when they pass through Antioch, the people of the cave would ride and will accompany the army actually. They become among the companions of the Imam. However, since in the Qissa to Ashab al-Kahf, I have decided that the cave should be in Jordan, I just forgot about this.